I think we can start the lecture now. And this seems to be old home week, and we have Jack Spicer with us, as we have off and on now for about 20 years. And it's always a pleasure. Jack first came here in 1946 as a student and stayed on here for some time doing research work, and has traveled widely and is...
Really? I got as far as Vancouver.
Well, there are people who are under the illusion that Jack Spicer was in Boston. And Minnesota. And he even once went as far as Palo Alto.
Yeah, that was the worst.
That was going pretty far.
Yeah, that was absolutely the worst. The Aborigines there were just terrible.
His only foreign country. Now, Jack seems to be eager to talk. And
no, not particularly.
And I'm not going, to stop him. And I think I've created enough silence so that we can get on with the business of the day. You all know Jack's bibliography. His latest book is Language. And some of you already know Jack. And the rest of you will soon have some idea of Jack. Isn't that right?
I guess so.
Okay.
I hope so, anyway. Well, when you talk about poetry and politics, it gets pretty desperate. To begin with, and if any of you aren't hearing me up in those far reaches, you aren't. Okay, I'll pitch my voice higher. I'll probably lose my voice in about 30 minutes, but you could come down to a lower seat. You've all read your morning paper and know what's happening as far as our escalator, or whatever it's called, in Vietnam. This is not what I'm trying to talk about. What I'm trying to talk about is for you people who are poets and want some idea about how the strategy is for you to become poets who both write good poetry and also don't sell out to the bosses. There are bosses in poetry as well as in the industrial empire and everything else. And what I want to talk to you about today is simply that, how to manage yourself in your own individual way, I guess, since no poet who's worthy of the term doesn't. But also, where to avoid the mistakes that one has. The mistake, say, of saying, gee, I'm a great poet, and somebody wants to print me, and you have, say, 5-6 poems. They're good, but they aren't that good, and so forth. And what do you do? The point is that essentially the enemy, as I think I quoted in one poem from Rosa Luxemburg, is in your own country. I mean, you're not going to be able to do a good goddamn thing about Vietnam. That's absolutely out, because President Johnson is not terribly interested whether intellectuals don't like Vietnam or not. As a matter of fact, I imagine he thinks whenever an intellectual says something about Vietnam, that it's a very good thing for him. Well, no, I mean seriously, just that. Seriously, there is no possible way of getting at any goddamn thing about the American system that I've been able to figure out in 40 years. Maybe you people can. It'd be marvelous if you could. I don't think so. The point is, then, if you're poets, not too many flash bulbs, huh? Let's get back. The point is, then, if you're poets, you ought to figure out what the power system is within your own community. Your enemy is simply something which is going to try to stop you from writing poetry. So what do you do then? It's a good question, and being battered around for 40 years, I'm not sure of the answer. But one of the things I do know is that you try to figure out the terrain. This is, I'm sure, subversive jungle fighting. Mao Tzu, who was a damn good poet and probably still is, and also Ho Chi Minh. You have to blend with the scenery, but at the same time, not open yourself up to the kinds of attacks which these very lovely people, reasonable people, nice people, people who believe in poetry, want to give you. It's a terribly hard thing to be a young poet, and I'm a young poet. I have two poems, four poems, whatever the hell it is, and say no to various publishers, but I think you ought to. I think in the first place that I don't know. It's hard to say because I've been talking about poets being united for years, and they aren't united. They have some silly-ass thing with the IWW now that might unite them, and if so, I'm all for it. But the point is that most people will exploit poets. They'll exploit them for, well, exploit the older ones for the knowledge they have, and they'll exploit the younger ones for the promise they have, which somehow or other gives the people some kind of thing that maybe they have promised too, which they don't. Essentially, what I mean is, stay loose, stay absolutely loose, and don't accept any offers whatsoever. But you're not just a poet. You're also a human being who wants to be recognized and everything else. And one of the best things that I heard on that was last night on KCBS, where some guy, his name was Anderson, was talking about the peach farmers. And he said the peach farmers didn't know a good goddamn thing about the number of peaches that were needed in the market. In other words, they would send in peaches, and peaches would go down to 1 cent a peach or whatever it was. And that this had a great deal to do with farm labor. What I'm saying is that you're going to sell out eventually. You have to, just for economic reasons. But when you sell out, know exactly what your peaches cost. Know exactly how many peaches there are on the market. Know exactly what is the price you can sell out for. This is something that most young poets don't do. And this doesn't sound like it has anything to do with the writing of poetry, but it does. The writing of poetry essentially is something which you really can't say anything about, except that if you violate something which is deep inside you, maybe even something that you didn't know was deep inside you, you're lost. You don't write, or you write bad poetry, or you write for the market, which is another nice thing. You manufacture artificial peaches to go to the market at the high price. And all of these things are just not really things to do. But I think of all of the young poets here, just about every one of them will make at least two or three mistakes in this line before they realize it. But what I'm trying to do is to say, don't make any more than two or three mistakes. It's well, it's a business of being a person, too. Now, as Tom told you, I went to Cal, and I was one of the people who didn't sign the oath in 1950. So, a great deal. I didn't suffer by it. I think that, on the whole, I gained by it, in an economic sense. But I was not really conscious of myself as a poet when I was not signing the oath. And I'm not at all sure that I wouldn't have signed the oath had I been conscious of myself being a poet. Now, lovely Fair Speech Movement now. Great, I guess. You can say the word fuck without any trouble whatsoever, as I did. But I don't quite see that it was the same thing as the oath. The oath was something which actually would have made your professors really scared. There'd been five oaths passed by state legislatures before ours, and the fight against the oath was something which well, there weren't any other state legislatures after that that passed any kind of oath. the oath was meaningless. Of the people in the English department who didn't sign the oath, none of them had voted for Wallace in 48. Two of them had voted for Dewey, God knows why, and the rest voted for Truman. I mean, it was not a thing that... But again, this is... You can't get the individual politics, the politics you have as a poet, out of the national politics. When I get upset by reading about Vietnam and what we're going to do there and so forth and so on, it hurts me as a poet. And I'm trying to think of the right words for this. There's a poet who's writing poetry, who's a conveyor of poetry, that doesn't have anything to do with his poems if he's a good poet. There's the individual, and then there's this society he moves in. Now, Mao Tse said once, you swim in it like a fish. You swim in whatever circumstance you are. You're talking about, he's talking about guerrilla war at the time, but you swim in it like a fish. But it's pretty difficult to do. These people, these Johnsons or these Olsons or these Kennedys or these anythings, they're better than you are at it. And what you have to do is to somehow or other figure out some way to swim in the thing like a fish, but not sell out. And I don't know how you do that. I really don't. I'm getting $100 to give this lecture, which is extremely generous, but I don't know if I wouldn't have stopped giving this lecture if it had been no money at all, because I just don't know how the society can be swum in like a fish, to use that kind of phrase. Now, I'd like, if it's all right with you people, some questions, and then I can go back on to what I was talking about. I think Plato was much better on saying the thing where he said that a poet shouldn't be allowed in society. What I mean is, sure, Shelley had this great stuff of saying that, but where did Shelley land? No, not where we all do exactly. I mean, Shelley did land in Italy and did have his heart saved by some guy who then made a lot of money out of saving his heart. But I don't really think that we have anything to do with it. I would certainly like to, but I haven't been elected by any body of anything to legislate, and the people who legislate are generally about as unpoetical as anyone can possibly be. Willie Yeats did serve in the Senate in Ireland, but Willie Yeats also didn't do a goddamn thing while he was there. He made about three speeches, which haven't even been reprinted yet, on account of the fact that they were so dull. And Willie Yeats, I think, is a great poet. I don't think Shelley is, but I think Willie Yeats is. And here's a new nation coming into being, all that sort of thing, all the place for the great poet to come in, to be the great senator. And what happened? Nothing. And
but don't they pull the strings behind, you know? It's not, they're unacknowledged.
Well, what poet do you think has pulled the strings? No, this is a serious question. No, of all the poets in all the world, what poet has pulled the strings? Of the universe, yeah, but we're talking about politics, which directly takes out the universe from the discussion. We're talking about the poet, the individual who is a poet, and society. Now, who pulled the strings of any poet that you've ever heard of, in any society you've ever heard of, even indirectly?
Mao.
Mao gave up being a poet when he was about 25, and he didn't pull any strings until then. He came actually from a fairly rich place in China, if there is such a thing as a rich place in China, which is doubtful, and upper middle class. He wrote poetry like anyone else did. He wrote some damn good poetry. He wrote poetry after he'd left that, but the poetry was not really anything which, at least to me, had any political meaning. You celebrate 5,000 miles or 10,000 miles or whatever the hell the march was, but there was no meaning to it in the sense that a poet has. Of course, I can't read Chinese. I may be absolutely wrong on all of this. Well, that was a lovely question because it did bring up an essential thing. And would someone else have a question?
I can see a difficulty in selling out your political ideas, but as far as your poetry goes, I don't quite understand the difficulty in selling your poetry. If somebody wants to pay you to print your poem somewhere, what's the difficulty except for perhaps personal profit?
Good question. And that's the thing I was trying to get at, but I obviously didn't yet. Well, take it just the most simple way possible. A poet is offered to go into an anthology, and the anthology is done by a good person, or at least you think he's a good person, something like that. The kind of association of your poetry with the other people's poetry makes an entire difference. it's, you feel when you've been coupled with the other people, kind of like, well, you're a pimp. Now, magazines the same way. Sure, a poetry magazine will pay you, what, $100, something like that now for a poem? So what? I mean, it's not so what when you don't have $100, like I'm lecturing here, because I don't. But in the long run, being associated with a thing which is a society in itself, a magazine is a society. I think Open Space proved that. You have to behave within the rules of the society, and if you don't, then there's nothing else. In other words, what I mean is, if you publish in Poetry Magazine, it's great. You get paid money. You get people reading it all through the country, all of that sort of thing. But in the long run, if you're participating in one of these things, then you have to say, yeah, I read poetry myself. Poetry magazine, that is, which I don't and wouldn't, because I don't believe in the society that it creates. That's a rather vague answer to your question. Why don't you ask me another question just to make it less vague? Not a personal, no, let's get that straight. I divided three classes of things. One was the poet, one was the individual who was writing the poem, and the third was society. And it's a business of the poet's honor, not the individual one. As far as my individual honor, I couldn't care less. No, I think that the poet writing poetry, receiving poetry, is not exactly tarnished, but is less able to write poetry than he was before from this. You can see the answer. No, Ronnie, did you have something more to ask than that?
I really struggled for that.
Did you also mean that a poet should become vitriolic, or very much against a political objective, that he would also damage his other poetry? In other words, does he have any obligation to perhaps speak up against political acts that he doesn't agree with? No more than anything else to get it off his chest.
Yeah, except it doesn't work that way. Of all of the poems I've seen in the last 10 years coming from this area, I haven't seen one good political poem. And I think that that's sort of an answer to you. The point is that...
Should you recommend that he write it and throw it away?
Yeah, or write a letter to his congressman or something like that. It's just as meaningless. I mean, the point is that practically I would bet that, well, I can't say all of you, but at least 99% of you were against the Vietnam thing. Okay, so... what do? You write a letter to your congressman, you write it down in poetry, but it doesn't come out right then. Again, I don't know of any political poems which have worked. Yes? Yeah, well, this is something, again, I have to think about. I hate people who are sitting up on a stage and giving, you know, nice, simple answers, which you can do. I think that Ginsberg... what did Ginsberg change by... the Hall trial, except for the fact that Mark Shorer had to be disturbed by the district attorney by being asked, well, what do you think Mr. Ginsberg means by fucked by saintly motorcyclists? It seems to me a totally unimportant point. Ginsberg's later poetry I don't like, and I can't really see the point of it. Certainly, he is not political. If he were here now, he'd say that he was working for love, which is an entirely different kind of thing. Well, if you can make it that way, could I have another question? No. No, and it certainly shouldn't be. But I think that, in 1950, when the oath thing was on, and there was a business of whether professors would not only be completely saddled with the word McCarthy is a nice word to use, but it wasn't just McCarthy, it was the whole thing, the Korean War and everything else. In 1950, there was no student movement whatsoever. In other words, I'm not sure that having a few
tune and some other really lyric like We Shall Overcome and getting real songs, that would be great. I just don't see quite how we go about doing it. I've wanted to, and
I don't know. If someone would start doing it, it'd be fine. Johnny Mercer is about the only one I know who, in song lyrics, has a real poetic sense. Look at that knocked-out moon and blowing his top and the blue, never saw the likes of you. Bye, bye, baby, and so forth. He's good.
Well, I also met in reading, say, like reading Hopkins, which is like song, even though you don't use the same voice, it's a reading voice, but it, the poetry itself will make you sing when you read it. I meant also using the speaking voice as well as using the singing voice.
Well, as you probably don't know, I have used songs in my poems all the time. In language, there are about five places where you have to sing the thing in order to get it. And anyone who doesn't know the fact that it's a song, since it's a popular song, like the Frog Went A-Courtin', well, it just doesn't belong there. But certainly this appeals to me. I'm really, if there's any way of getting the poet, the individual, and society together, it would be the song. But I just haven't yet been able to do it. Well, I think that's all for now, and I thank you very much for the questions and so forth. And